This is the Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers. Here's your host, Jessica Coody, and Husker Radio Network analyst, Jeremiah Searles.
And we are back with another episode of the Sideline Slice. He's Searles, a.k.a. the Big Dog. I'm Jessica. And before we talk any football, Searles, I had a little birdie tell me that you went to a certain concert recently. You're like T-Pain's number one fan.
I love T-Pain. I knew every song, every word for the entire hour and a half set, and I had way too much fun.
I heard he puts on a good show.
Fantastic. 20 years of T-Pain. And that was even the best part is he was joking. He's like, I know some of you guys are day ones out here, and everyone started cheering. He's like, which means y'all are old as beep. He's like, I got to get y'all home. You can go to bed and your Tempur-Pedics. I was like, yeah, you're not wrong, man. 20 years ago, I was all about T-Pain.
What's his number one song?
I mean,
in your mind, what's your favorite song?
In my mind? Oh man, probably Buy You a Drink. I mean, it's just, it's a timeless, I can remember my buddies in high school with the Honda Acura with the two 12-inch subs in the back, just rattling the car apart to that song over and over again. Oh yeah. Such a great show. Such a good time.
And people, I guess, you know, just being that you're here, you're offensive lineman, you'd be more of a country guy or.
I love country too. I love all music, Jess. I know you went to
some electric stuff.
I go to EDM. I go to country. I had T-Pain. I went through a heavy rap phase in my life. Like I could probably sing all the words to Lil Carter 3's album still to this day. I've been on the spectrum when it comes to music. I just love good music.
Okay, so what would be your number one concert in Memorial Stadium then?
In Memorial Stadium? I know he's not on tour anymore, but George Strait.
Yeah.
George Strait in Memorial Stadium would be electric.
Yeah.
Garth Brooks was incredible. Like, I can only imagine what George Strait would be.
All right. Let's talk some football. And again, not the most perfect performance, but you come out with a win, and all three phases had a hand in it at some point or another. And pretty complimentary football and finding a way to win that one against who do we just play?
Northwestern.
Find a way to win against Northwestern.
Yeah, I mean, stop me if I'm a broken record, but Mike Eckler is amazing. I mean, to have that kickoff return, it was actually funny. I was texting my buddy Cody Green, who played us here, and Eckler's a big recruiting piece here. And I watched the first couple kickoffs, and I go, dude, he's setting up the bounce. And I text Cody, I go, he's setting up the bounce. He goes, I thought the same thing, because it was that sideline return, because they wanted to kick it over into the right sideline. And then sure enough, here it comes, sideline return. That R5 gets a little nervous, starts working his way in, and then here comes the bounce. And it was just so well executed. And that's what special teams are about. It's about want to and execution. And so for him to continue to be able to get that unit up. And I love that Rule's like, dude, don't touch me. Like, you psychopath, don't touch me. When, I mean, he's just so fun to watch on the sideline. So, yeah, special teams has been fantastic. Obviously, would have loved to see that 44-yarder by Kananen go in, especially since it would have won me the Husker question of the week. Thanks a lot, Josh. You know, but overall, I thought it was a really good team performance. Obviously, still some things we got to get cleaned up. But overall, it was really fun to watch Nebraska come back out after getting punched in the mouth by Minnesota and find a way to win a football game.
I don't know if there's probably anybody more fired up than Searles to see the 6 handoffs and 38 yards for Emmett Johnson in that first drive.
Yeah, I mean, run the damn ball lives in my blood and in my DNA. And so watching Dana Holgorsen commit to the run and allow this offensive line to lean on people and get going and let Emmett get back into that groove, I think it's going to be really important as we go down the stretch. That all being said, I worry about the longevity of Emmett if that's the game plan going forward through the month of November. Right, very physical teams coming in, lots of teams like Iowa. I mean, Iowa's physical, USC's physical. You go down the list and you're like, yeah, this is going to be a really hard-nosed grind, but that's why you have the running back like Emmett, and you took some time off of him here in the midpoint of the season. You're going to have to go with him, because I truly believe it's not Dylan Raiola that makes this offense go right now. It's Emmett Johnson.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Coach Holgorsen had talked about that. He said he just gets better as the game goes along. And you've talked a lot about that on this podcast several times about the offensive line and just continuing to hammer that out. But what about Emmett that allows for him to just to keep getting better throughout the course of a football game?
Yeah, I mean, I think for him, it's his ability to make people miss. Mm-hmm. I think that really frustrates defensive tackles, defensive linebackers, safeties, where they feel like they've got him bottled up, and then he does that jump cut of his, which is so smooth, and then there's 5-6 more yards. And so then those safeties stop running down in there as quickly as they can because they don't want to get juked, and now he's running over them for 5 or 6 more yards, and he's given space, so he has more room to make the cuts. He just puts so much stress and strain on linebackers and safeties when he gets into the open field. It's fantastic. But a lot of that was because the offensive line was opening good size holes and allowing him to get through the line of scrimmage without being touched, right? Yards before contact was very good in this game. And that's something that we haven't had a lot of this season, right? A lot of it's been Emmett having to run through arm tackles or defensive linemen falling off blocks and making tackles at the end of at the line of scrimmage. And so for him to be able to continue to press the hole, get up into the secondary, make guys miss has been a really big key. And that just wears guys down over the course of 60 minutes in a football game.
Before we talk about the offensive line, So we go to that last drive, and I think that was another thing that Holgorsen said today, one of Dylan's best drives, and for the offense to, again, put together another game-winning drive. What were they doing in that drive? Why couldn't they do that in some of the other drives throughout the course of the game?
Great question. I don't know. I don't know why all of a sudden it clicked. I don't know why all of a sudden it was like, oh, here's our rhythm. Here's our offense. Here's where it needs to be, because that was just better execution there than there had been all game. I think if there's one frustration I've had with this team over the course of this year is we have looked very good at times in the fourth quarter. And yes, that is the money quarter, and that's when you have to go win the game type of thing. But we have to have that mentality from the word go. We can't wait. And I know Coach Rule's thing is own the fourth quarter, but fight for three quarters to give yourself a chance to control the fourth quarter. Don't have to make it this big comeback thing or this big, got to execute perfectly right now and convert on the third and tens and convert on all these pieces. Just execute throughout the course of the game and make it easy on yourself when you get to the fourth quarter, right? That's been my biggest issue, but it's a better problem, I guess, to have to be like, oh, we're too good in the fourth quarter, not good enough in the first and the second, third, right? But as we continue to play against teams that are going to control the clock, limit our possessions, right? We have to continue to take our chances and execute early with this offense on first, second, third quarter, then just waiting till the fourth to get going.
Okay. So, and then, you know, one of the things I feel like just observing on the sideline, and we've seen it throughout the season, just a lot of young players, but also a lot of players that have been a part of this program that are haven't won this many games this quickly. And how much is that a process to figure out how to put the foot on their throat, you know, and keep the pedal to the metal and just really put a team away? What kind of learning curve and process is that for a group of players that haven't always done that? And then some younger players that are experiencing this for the first time.
Yeah, you have to learn how to handle winning, right? And it's a weird thing to think about, right? You think, oh, you won, everything's great, we'll just continue to go. You have to truly learn how to handle winning, because with winning comes a lot of major differences than losing, right? When you lose, you get in the meeting room, it's back to the drawing board. Why didn't that work? This one play could have saved us the game, blah, 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 blah. You start stringing together wins, it's really easy to just go, oh, we're a winning football team, right? And lose a tiny detail in practice or lose a tiny detail during the week or not watch as much film that week because you think, hey, we're winning, we're a better football team than this, we should just go out and beat them. That takes training and practice, and you have to learn to understand that handling winning, you have to approach the next week of practice the same way, but with more intensity than the week before, after the week next after winning, right? Because when you win, every time you win another game, the target on your back is painted bigger and bigger, right? Every time you win, the next team wants to be the one to knock you down, and they're going to be gunning for you, especially when you're sitting there at 6-2 going into end of October here and going, hey, we got a legitimate chance looking at a 9-win, 10-win season here, guys. If we can put it all together, the other teams are going, hey, that's Nebraska. They haven't won 9 games in 10 years. We're not going to be the ones to let it do it to us. So just because we're winning football games doesn't mean that we can let the attention to detail slip. We're too young in a lot of positions. We still have to treat every single week like we're going to get that team's best shot, because we are.
Okay. So let's talk offensive line, man. Gutty performance by those guys. You have to be proud of that group. But Rocco comes back. I talked to him after the game. You can talk about a dude that in a lot of pain. And, you know, Teddy goes down. The one sack, just gives up the one sack. And unfortunately, it was the one that Teddy Prochaska gets hurt on. Gunner's out. Turner steps in. He's not fully healthy. But that had to make you proud to see that effort out of those guys on Saturday.
Yeah, Rocco's a warrior. And it's just a warrior. I mean, to have your hand broken, and listen, I know we had surgery a week ago, but anyone that's ever had a surgery,
yeah,
you know that that hurts, right? The body, once you let daylight into the body, it's never really the same. And regardless if it's a hand, knee, hip, or ankle, right, you have swelling, you have stitches, you have just pain of everything healing. Like, that definitely was a hard thing for him to go out and do. And I can't commend him enough for showing his toughness. And the same token, my heart breaks for Teddy.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, a guy that has battled through so much, continued to go, still puts his body out on the line every single time. To have another ACL tear is just, I mean, I'm sure he just feels gutted by the whole thing. So feel terrible for him. But on a more macro level, I'm more terrified for our tackle depth. Right. We talked about this going into the season, how excited we were that we had all this tackle depth, right? You're like, man, Gunner, Teddy, Elijah, like, you're just like, man, we have really serviceable tackles, Turner, like, we're going to be in a great spot. And here we are going to November going, we have like 1.5 tackles. Like, maybe, like, Turner is a little dinged up still, but he's going to have to get thrusted into a starting role. And now you're going, all right, Tyler Kanak, be ready to go. Like, we want to think that we're going to make it through unscathed here, right? Hey, is Gunner going to be ready to go? Like, there's this all these question marks that are floating around at the tackle position right now, that it's a thing that we're going to get tested. We're going to come after us from the tackle spot, but our depth is going to be tested in a big way here over the next month and a half.
Okay, but before you scare us all, what did you like about the way that those guys? What did you like about the way those guys were able to get it rolling in the first quarter and then in the fourth quarter?
Well, they ran the ball. They won first down, right? And that's what happened in the first quarter and the fourth quarter. Is we were very successful on first down. We were 4 yards, 5 yards. We were able to skip some third downs. Right, having a big run on a second down, going from 2nd and 6 to 1st and 10, that's always huge. And you can just skip the third down completely, chew up some more clock. But I just felt like the thing I loved with what Dana did is he trusted the O-line to, even when things weren't going great in the second and third quarter, he didn't abandon the run. And every O-line coach I've ever been around just tells the offensive coordinator, like, just trust it. Please just stick with it, because eventually one of these guys is going to get wore down from getting beat on and beat on, and then he's not going to be in his gap, and there's the explosive. And that's exactly what happened in the fourth quarter. Is this O-line, I mean, Justin and Henry and Rocco specifically in the middle, were all just leaning on these dudes and pushing on them and pushing on them, and eventually they just ran out of gas. Mm-hmm. And they were able to push them and get over them and started making those big chunk plays as we went down the field, which opened up a couple of the play action games and opened up a couple of the abilities to get Dylan out on the edge, right? And so those were all great things on that front there, and a lot of it falls with Rayola. I mean, I'm sure Donnie was tested this week at coming off the 9-point sacks or 9 sacks against Minnesota and not being able to run the football. I'm sure he challenged his guys, and they all rose to the challenge.
Well, two turnovers by the Nebraska offense, but 2 takeaways by the Husker defense, mm-hmm. and that was a big emphasis. They hadn't had any in a couple games, but the fumble with Dylan, he is trying to reach for the first down. I think he will learn from that, but the interception, another interception, what did you see on that, and how are you concerned at all with the way that he's thrown it away here these last few weeks?
Yeah, anytime the quarterback turns the football over, it's concerning, because you don't want your quarterback thinking about turning the ball mm-hmm. over, because then he's going to turn it over, right? You just want him to naturally take care of the football well. That's now the second pick he's thrown on an RPO option, right? And so what that tells me is he needs to continue to keep his eyes on the read guy a little bit longer. And also, we ran a lot of RPOs early in the game, and then we kind of got away from it, and then we went back to the RPO game there. And when we got the turnover, and we got the ball down in that high red area, but they weren't respecting the run part of the RPO, right? That linebacker was sitting there. He wasn't triggering on the run. And so in order to have a successful RPO game, you have to make them really respect the run. And sometimes that means handing it off when it's not always pretty. Not always the perfect look. The linebacker didn't scream out of there. He kind of bounced out of there. Well, hand it off and make that linebacker commit to go make that tackle. And do that a couple times. Then eventually that linebacker should go, oh, man, they're handing this thing off. Then he crashes, and then you get to the pass part of the RPO. I think a lot of times people think the RPO is truly a 50-50 split. I'm a firm believer that when you run the RPO, it's got to be a 75-25 split of run to pass. Because the second those linebackers don't respect the run, like the linebacker did against Northwestern, he wasn't diving in there to tackle Emmett. He floated out into the throwing lane. Like, you got to make that dude pay. If he's not fully committed into stopping that run, hand the football off and let us go get 4 yards in a cloud of dust. So I think it's a little bit twofold of Dylan learning and maturing in this RPO system and understanding, hey, sometimes it's better just to hand it and let things be, let it lie, and then get to the, instead of thinking like, hey, there's the big chunk play that we can get in the pass game, which is always a quarterback's like, oh, super exciting, I want to throw the football, right? Hand it off enough times to really make that linebacker have to truly commit to the run, first, and then get back to the pass. Don't just try and live on the pass early.
All right, let's quickly flip things over to the defensive side of the ball. A couple of big plays again. The big touchdown run continues to plague this defense. Mm. What was the issue on the run score that bounced in and just got to the outside? I mean, how can that get corrected in a hurry?
Yeah, we just lost contain. You know, it's a 3rd-and-1 play. It's short yardage, so the safeties are up close, the linebackers are up close, and everyone's anticipating an A-gap, B-gap run because that's usually the high probabilities on these 3rd-and-shorts. And so it is exactly what we thought it was, an A-gap, B-gap run, and Cam Leonard was the last man in defense on that boundary side there into the bench. And so he sets the edge initially. He sees the running back dive into the A-gap. So he comes across the tackle's face, tries to get in there, create the pile, and that just allowed that running back to pop outside. And since it was a short yardage situation, safeties and everything were sucked up so close that once he captured that edge, then he was gone. And so it wasn't a missed tackle issue. It wasn't anything more than just a mental error by Cam Lenhart, understanding the situation and trying to make a play, trying to get in there and throw a body in there to the A-gap to stop the 3rd-and-1, and we lost contain. And you can't have those type of things hurt you. You know, this defense has been talked a lot about kind of a bend, don't break. And they've done a nice job when we get down into the red zone of forcing field goals. But we have to not break on the big explosive plays, right? The big explosive plays down the field, the big run plays, those are the type of things that keep Coach Butler up at night, right? Keep him up at night going, man, we need to get this stopped. We need to figure this out, right? Those are the type of things that are more fixable in the meeting room than they are out on the field.
Valentino's, a slice of home you just can't get anywhere else. What started with a treasured family recipe has become a Nebraska tradition for over 68 years. Proud to be the official pizza of the Huskers.
All right, let's turn the page because we got to talk about USC and a big one, 6:30 night game.
You're already wearing black. Look at you.
Oh, I'm wearing
black
every day this week. I did it yesterday, black on black. I got black on black today. I'll wear black tomorrow. I'll wear black Thursday. I'll wear black Friday and black Saturday.
I love it.
It's a blackout week for me.
Yeah, careful. I mean, not that kind of blackout, but yeah, blackout week. You know, we're looking at it from the USC's perspective. This place has got to be crazy. And Matt Rhule talked about it yesterday at his press conference. And the buzz around the week is we need to be a difference. And when I say we, I mean Husker Nation. Right, we have to make this environment loud.
Yeah.
There are a lot of check with me system at the ball. They're going to try and run a hurry up type of play calling, which means a lot of communication. We have to make them battle the noise, battle the chaos, be respectful, but be loud and be mean. Right. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. I mean, when we got the refs you suck chant going the other day,
I don't think I've ever heard that.
That place was loud. I mean, we should start some more chants. So I don't care what it is, but you got 90,000 people and they're screaming three words. It was loud.
Nebraska Nice only goes so far when you make so many bad calls.
Listen, Nebraska Nice, we can turn it off at 6:29 on Saturday night, and we can turn it back on at 11 when you call in for Big Red Reaction. Listen, like, we'll get it all figured out, but let's make this a Colorado-type environment.
Yeah.
Like, let's make this the Miami-type of environment. Let's make this those big, huge games that have been a huge difference maker being Husker Nation. We need to make that for us on Saturday night.
All right, well, let's start with the USC offense. You know, Lincoln Riley, I was at Oklahoma with him. He's a genius. He's an offensive genius. Dana Holgorsen, Lincoln Riley come from the same tree. He's so brilliant in seeing the areas that the playmakers that he has to take advantage on any given defense and how to attack it. What are the keys, I guess, for containing a Lincoln Riley offense?
You have to be very gap sound when you play a Lincoln Riley offense, because his bread and butter is the counter read, right? You pull the guard and you pull the tackle and you get them leading up on the play side. And then the quarterback is going to read the backside defensive end or the backside linebacker. And he's either going to pull it and run, or he's going to pull it and run a pass option on that side. Or if they sit, he's going to hand it, right? And so they're back. I mean, Wayman Jordan is a very good back. He understands the scheme really well. And I think he's going to be a guy that is going to be very patient and allow those blocks to happen up front. And then he's going to hit the hole hard. And so this week, more imperative than any other week, is gap integrity. Because if we miss on the front side A gap, or we get caught in a stunt and the B gap's open, this system and this scheme is built to exploit one person out of their gap. And that's where they're getting their big explosive plays in the run game. Same thing as a safety, as a corner, as a nickelback, you have to be ready to put your nose in there and stop the run, but you also have to be very eye disciplined with your guys in the backfield and with your receiver and the people that you're responsible for, because at any moment Maiava can pull that thing down and throw that quick slant or throw it over your head on a play action. So it's going to be a very challenging week for the Blackshirts, because this offense puts a lot of stress on you in a lot of different ways.
What did Notre Dame do well against USC? I think it was their lowest scoring output of the season.
Yeah, they were able to create negative plays. They created a lot of negative plays on first and second down and put USC behind the sticks. And as you know, watching a Lincoln Riley offense, they want to be the one to dictate the tempo, right? They want to know, I can hurry up to the line and snap it. I can take my time. I can do whatever I want. Well, when you start creating negative plays as a defense and you start putting them in second and 12, or, you know, second and 10, and you knock them back, now it's third and 11. It makes the offense have to slow down, regroup. Okay, maybe we need to get in a huddle. Maybe we need to do a little muddle huddle, make sure we're all on the same page. But when this offense is rolling and clicking and picking up chunk plays at a time, that's when they're at their most dangerous. And I thought Notre Dame did a really nice job defensively of not allowing them to stay on schedule, making them have to make off-schedule plays, making them live in third and long where they don't want to be, and they just never really let them get in a flow and a rhythm, which is why I'm saying it's so important for Husker Nation to make that communication take 5 seconds longer than it needs to be, and make Lincoln Riley be screaming timeout because their clock shot's running down and they're trying to get into the perfect play because it's taking long to get in. Like, that's what this offense needs, and the longer they can keep going with that, the more confident they become.
By no means does USC have the top defense in the country, but they are improved. They are improved. What allows this unit to be better than they have been this year?
I think they got some better pass rushers. I think that they went out last year and they understood, okay, we're in the Big Ten now. We got to be able to get to the quarterback, right? This is not the Pac-12 where we don't play defense and we just need to score. It's like a mini Big 12. Like, this is a big boy football league, and we need big boy football players at the defensive end spot. Right. And so, you know, looking it up here, they've got a really good amount of sacks, 21 sacks on the year, right? 21 sacks on the year. So they can get after the quarterback. And I think that they're going to try and put a lot of pressure on Dylan. I think they're going to blitz, and we're going to have to find ways to pick that up front with our backup tackles in. And Emmett Johnson's going to be tested in blitz protection too. But I do think that they picked up some good interior D linemen and some edge rushers.
I don't think this is going to be like Lincoln Riley, Oklahoma type game, but we're going to have to score to keep up with USC on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, as good as the Blackshirts have been playing, and as good as, I mean, some things, Lincoln Riley offense to score points. Like, it's not, if we can hold USC under 21 points, I'll be ecstatic, right? If we can get them to 17 or even 21, 24, like that is going to be, we need to score 28 or 30 to win this game. That's just the way it works with these Lincoln Riley teams. They're built to score points and points up in a hurry and then pin their ears back and go after the passer. And so in order for us to continue to do that, we're going to have to not get into the idea of the track meet, but we're going to have a lot of urgency when we touch the football, knowing, hey, we need to at least flip the field in a big way, or go give us a chance to kick a field goal or a touchdown and put points on the board. Because if we don't, we could find ourselves behind in a hurry if this Lincoln Riley offense gets clicking.
And as you said, I mean, they want to dictate it. And so nothing
so
frustrates Lincoln Riley and those offenses when the opposing offense ends up setting the pace for the game.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't think Lincoln Riley hates much, but I think three and outs are his nemesis. Like, he can't stand when the offense goes out there and goes three and out, because it's usually kind of quick, right? It's like boom, boom, boom. And they're like, oh, all right, well, we'll figure it out. But when we can dictate the tempo, I mean, and you look at the games that we've won this year, we've dictated the tempo, right? We've had, hey, we need to go score, whatever it might be. Even the Michigan State game, when things didn't seem to be going great for us, we get the ball back, we flip the field, we flip the thing, we go score, and then we dictated the tempo the rest of the game. That's why I talked about how important it's going to be for us to execute early in this game, because we do not want to fall behind this team. We want to make sure that we are fighting with them on every possession, offensively, defensively, special teams, because this does stream to me a one possession game in the fourth quarter, and who's going to blink first.
I think if he despises three and outs, I think when the opposing team goes on 8-minute drives, that might be up there with it too.
Yeah, I think that's right, too. I think anytime his offense is on the bench, he probably gets really upset.
Okay, keys for this one. What are your keys for a Husker victory?
Yeah, you know, I think a big key is going to be tackling in space. I think, you know, with what I talked about with Lincoln Riley and how he stresses with this scheme of the counter scheme with the RPO tag to it, there's going to be a lot of opportunities for one-on-one tackles for Singleton and for Shavers and for Wright and those guys out in space. We got to get them on the ground. Still too many missed tackles last week against Northwestern, and no offense to Northwestern, but they don't have the athletes that USC has, right? USC has got some crazy good athletes out in space. We got to make sure we get them on the field, get them down on the ground. We have to win the turnover battle. This is a team that if we give them a short field, they're going to go for the throat and they're going to go for the kill immediately. That's been in his DNA since he was back in Oklahoma. Right. And this offense loves the big play. And then, you know, lastly, protect the quarterback. I mean, it seems silly. It seems trivial, but Dylan needs to be kept upright in this game, and he cannot get hit early. This has got to be a pride type game for the offensive line of we're not coming out. We're no sacks, no hits, no hurries needs to be the goal for all five guys that go into that game. And is it going to be perfect? No game is, but that has to be the standard going into the rest of the game. Hey, 15 special, man. Don't get him hit. Don't get him rattled. Don't get his feet in his clock. Allow him to sit back there and operate the offense and how Dana Holgorsen wants it to be operated. But that all starts with making sure that he has a very clean jersey at the end of 60 minutes.
Fourth key, Husker Nation, bring it.
Bring the noise. My key. Hey, I'm going to do this too. My game ball last week, Rocco Spindler.
Yeah,
I'm giving it to Rocco. I mean, I think an unsung hero of that game, a leader in that room, a leader on this team, to go out there and battle with a broken hand and fight the way he did, I'm all about it.
I think it inspired a team, too, to see him do that as well.
Absolutely. It's any player, right? Any player that you know is dinged and you know is banged up, because everyone at this point in the year is dinged and banged up. Right. Nothing feels good. You don't wake up in the morning like, oh, it feels good. Like everything hurts. But when you go in there and you're like, oh, my wrist really hurts. And you're looking at Rocco, who's like, I had a bone sticking out of my hand. I'm playing. What's your excuse? You're like, you're right. I'm not that hurt. We can go do this thing. Right. Like it just brings a whole different mentality to a football team.
All right. Last thing. It's Halloween and the Searles household does Halloween right. And I was sent in a question. They want to know about what the Searles clan has planned for this year.
Yep. So my brother and his wife are coming out again. And so Aylin wants to be Ariel. And okay. So Graham's going to be Flounder.
Okay.
The wife is Ursula, to her much of dismay. And then I am King Triton. And then Oliver wanted to be a pirate. And so Oliver is going to be a pirate. And my brother's wife, Val, is going to be the parrot for the pirate. And then Michael, my brother, is going to be Sebastian, the crab. So nice. We've got a real ocean theme going on here in the Searles household this year.
No, is it Eric? No. Who's the guy she falls in love with?
Who?
Eric.
I don't know. My daughter only has love for me right now, Jess. That's all that matters.
I didn't know if you had an Eric in the clan.
I don't know who Eric is.
The reason
is.
Why she I wanted to have feet in the first place, Searles.
Yeah, well, no one wants to have feet to be a mute. Didn't you watch the movie?
Apparently a long time ago. I don't know. All right, good stuff. You're back on Big Red Reaction this week too, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll be back late night. Late night with Coatney and Searles. Be sure to tune in.
That's a must listen to. Must tune in. Hey, I got a little surprise for you. We're going to be putting that thing on camera.
Oh, yeah. See, I quit. If you put that thing on camera, I just quit. I don't. You know me. I barely like to be on camera for this. My emotions, I hold so well.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it offline.
All right, we'll see. Yeah,
all right. For Jeremiah Searles, I'm Jessica Cootie. This has been The Sideline Slice, presented by Valentino's Pizza, the official pizza of the Huskers.
Go Big Red.
Valentino's treasured Italian family recipes have been passed down for generations and still locally owned and operated. Valentino's proudly serving Nebraskans in Memorial Stadium for over 30 years.